Hello, and welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this podcast, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Welcome to Episode 9 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Monday, February 27th, 2017. I'm so glad you can join me for the next 30 minutes. You will be pleased to learn that this show contains some good news regarding climate action. I know, good news is hard to find. In addition, we have two excellent answers to our monthly puzzler question. And one of our regular listeners has submitted a new puzzler question. In the Art House, you will meet the most unlikely climate advocate, Elizabeth Jeremiah. She is a Southern preacher lady with a message for us today. But first, let's talk about activism. These days, lots of people in the USA and beyond are looking for ways they can change systems and policies and laws. We see an increase in protests, marches, vigils, and disruptions in town hall meetings. People are meeting and organizing. But how do we figure out what are our best approaches to take when confronted with big problems that require big changes? To get some perspective on this, I sat down with Eileen Flanagan. Eileen is a writer, a social change teacher, a Quaker, and an activist. She currently teaches the course We Were Made for This Moment. Online and in workshops, she trains people on how to be effective in their advocacy and activism work. Eileen told me about Bill Moyer. No, not the PBS personality. This Bill Moyer was an engineer who then dove deep into social change movements. He then spent much of his life leading trainings around nonviolent direct action. He also identified and taught successful strategies for bringing about social change. Eileen shared with me some of Moyer's teachings about the roles we might take when seeking to change the world around us.
And he found that there were four roles that showed up over and over again. And the names we've given them are helper, advocate, organizer, and rebel. And they show up in all kinds of ways. And the way to think of it is really, what is their orientation? So a helper's orientation is, what can I do to make things better without messing with the system? So if you're concerned about climate change, a helper might insulate their home, put solar panels on, maybe do that in their congregation, try and live a low carbon footprint life. That sort of thing would be attractive to someone who's naturally a helper. An advocate takes the role of trying to use the tools of the system to change things. So lobbying, using lawsuits, trying to convince elected officials and people in power to make decisions, essentially using the tools of the system. In contrast, a rebel uses disruptive tactics. They don't do letter writing. They don't do lobbying. Instead, they do protests of various kinds. In my tradition, we usually use nonviolent direct action, targeting a decision maker, maybe a corporation, and trying to get them to change a policy through consistent troublemaking. The fourth role is called the organizer. And in some ways, the organizer is the trickiest because they can use different kinds of tactics, but the thing that makes someone an organizer is they are oriented toward their group, toward their community. So, for example, someone who says, let's get our congregation together and see what we can do together about climate change. That's a very organizer way of thinking about it. And the group might decide to insulate the church, or they might decide to, you know, go lobby together, or they might take up a rebel tactic. The focus of the organizer is what will our group do. So this shows up again and again in different kinds of social change. If you think about the Montgomery bus boycott, Rosa Parks was the rebel. She got arrested for refusing to move on the bus, but there wouldn't have been a big thing if it hadn't been for the woman who stayed up all night mimeographing leaflets saying, let's all boycott the buses on Monday. She played the organizer role. She got people out. The advocate role was played by the NAACP that filed a lawsuit against the Montgomery bus system. And then helpers were the people who drove people. The ordinary citizens of Montgomery and the African-American community walked to work for over a year in order to put pressure on the bus company. They wouldn't have been able to do that without the helpers who came and gave people rides and things like that. One thing I found really helpful about the four roles is to realize that organizations play a niche, but then each organization needs in some way people who have these different strengths. So even though my group, we have helpers, and they're the people who bring cookies to the meeting, and boy, are we glad that they're part of us, right? If we do civil disobedience, we need people who are thinking about taking care of people and things like that. So there's an individual level to finding out what are your gifts and proclivities that you can bring to the movement. Organizations are most effective when they pick one. An organization that tries to play all four roles is probably going to be less effective because they're jumping around too much.
I want to bring another voice into this conversation. Amani Thurman is a college freshman at the University of Delaware. Amani is passionate about many issues. He is sensitive to the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. This is in part because his mom is a lesbian. He's also very concerned about climate change. In the past, Amani has taken on the rebel role as a protester. The day we spoke, though, he wore a business suit. We were in Washington, D.C. 1 week after the election of Donald Trump. For the first time in his life, Amani lobbied members of Congress. He joined over 300 Citizens Climate Lobby volunteers who have relentlessly built relationships with lawmakers in their pursuit for climate solutions. Amani explains that sometimes being a rebel is essential. He is also seeing the value of the advocate role.
I've also been in protests as well, and I can understand that aggression. There's positions where you want to get angry, and in some sense it's necessary, I think, to get angry and get action. But also I'd say, like, this experience lobbying is a point to practice your citizenship. Instead of grabbing attention about a subject, also influencing the people that will sign and put into law and legislation what you really need in a country.
That day, Amani spoke with both Democrats and Republicans in their congressional offices. I asked him how he and his fellow volunteer lobbyists were received.
I don't think I came in contact with anyone that was denying the progress or the points that we were moving across. I think in my productive meetings, there was a layoff for conversation, and it was brought to my attention, like, by these people that were having meetings with us, that they wouldn't have it if they didn't have any kind of inclination or, you know, desire to maybe even talk it out. So I met with three Republicans, and they all were open to conversation. In a lot of scenarios, a lot of these Republican offices weren't even ready for this election. A lot of them had prepared for the latter, which is really interesting. A lot of them were kind of confused about, like, the result of the election, and they were open to change, which was really interesting. Changed my view a lot.
Amani and I spoke about identity and the importance of telling our stories to lawmakers and their staff. Amani talks about his mom and his concerns about LGBTQ rights. He also comes to this new lobbying work as a young Black man.
I want to be a voice of the people that I've grown up with. I want to be a change for the world. I want to be what will be occupying the population. I look a little bit older than I am, so I'm 18 years old. I mean, I'm also Black, which is something that I've struggled with identifying with, and it's been really interesting to, like, remember, like, oh, I represent a minority.
The day I spoke with Amani, many climate advocates were still trying to make sense of the election of Donald Trump and what it means for their work. Amani, though, was brimming with hope. His experience of speaking directly to people in power inspired him.
The citizens, and especially the kids, we're in a position where we can have a lot of voice. This is the time to determine our future. There's a lot of fervor expressed about the climate. I think this is a time now more than ever to just say, like, look, we're citizens, to the people that are going to be writing legislation about where the world's going to be going. I have an opportunity, and the people I know have an opportunity, and, like, we're all kids. I don't want to devalue the points I make. I feel like I could be important. and I feel like I am important, and I feel like the people I'm amongst are important, and I'd love for that to be voiced, and this is a perfect opportunity.
Amani's hope is contagious. Still, news stories abound with bad news about climate change. We're hearing about more droughts, floods, animal extinctions, exploding insect populations, and melting polar caps. Politically, people are uncertain what will happen next. Well, I have some good news to share with you that is not getting much media coverage. First, there is a rapidly growing movement among American college and high school students. The Put a Price on It campaign is getting lots of traction. I also heard about a group of over 300 high school students in Utah that quickly formed. They've been lobbying their state government to issue a resolution that echoes their concerns about climate change. All over the U.S., students and administrators from dozens of college campuses are talking about their next steps and how they can promote action. The Gibson Resolution, which we've talked about before on the show, is a statement by Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives. This resolution will be reintroduced this session. It will include even more Republicans this time around. There is also a bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus in the U.S. Congress, and that caucus is up to 26 members. Finally, we have this bit of very big good news. Earlier this month, the Climate Leadership Council revealed itself to the world. This is a group of Republican bigwigs who recognize climate change as a risk and that human population is fueling it. They come armed with solutions, including pricing carbon. The group includes big names, including former U.S. cabinet members. These include George Shultz, James Baker, and Henry Paulson. The Climate Leadership Council has gotten a lot of press. They seek to provide a path forward to address climate change during the Trump administration. If the U.S. is going to address climate change from a federal level, Republicans must be on board. The pieces are coming into place that will make this easier to happen, much easier than it was a year ago. You can find out more about the Climate Leadership Council at their website, clcouncil.org. That's clcouncil.org. If you want to know more about the Put a Price on It campaign, visit climatesolution.com. That's climatesolution.com. To learn more about the sort of work that Amani Thurman is doing as a volunteer lobbyist, visit citizensclimate.org. That's citizensclimate.org. Finally, you can learn more about Eileen Flanagan at her website, eileenflanagan.com. Flanagan is spelled F-L-A-N-A-G-A-N, eileenflanagan.com. The rebel group that Eileen is part of is called Earthquaker Action Team. You can find out more about that group at equate.org, E-Q-A-T.org, equate.org. Also check out Eileen's book, Renewable, One Woman's Search for Simplicity, Faithfulness, and Hope. It is the story of Eileen's midlife crisis that led her to become a climate activist. You can buy it anywhere books are sold. Now, you can find all of these links and much more over at citizensclimatelobby.org/blog. And I'd love to hear from you. How about you tell me about the roles you have taken through the years? Share some of your successes, large and small. You can email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Now, it is time for the Art House. Joining us in the Art House is Elizabeth Jeremiah, a comic creation of mine. Through Elizabeth Jeremiah, I explore the role of faith and climate change. This character offers up metaphors to help us better understand both climate science and what sort of big, bold response is needed. Some may think she is an unlikely voice crying out in the wilderness for climate action. But we are seeing the world change rapidly around us. This includes a growing concern about the climate from a diversity of people. My hope is that this comic monologue will help to expand the conversation and shed some fresh light. Welcome, Elizabeth Jeremiah, to the Art House.
This is Elizabeth Jeremiah from the Elizabeth Jeremiah Global Worldwide Ministries in Jesus. I have an important message for you, a message that potentially affects generations to come. What I'm talking about is generational curses. In my church, we warn people that their actions today have consequences for our children and our children's children's children. When I hear you saying, "But Elizabeth Jeremiah, I don't have any children," to which I reply, "Well, then I will pray for you." Our actions, for good or bad, have repercussions like ripples on the ocean that reach far beyond us. Exodus chapter 36, verse 7 states that the iniquity of the fathers will fall upon the sons and upon the sons' sons unto the third and to the fourth generations. Now, I discern that many of you in the listening audience are secular humanists, so I will give you an example of a generational curse that might make some sense for you. Let's talk for a moment about the chemical compound carbon dioxide. Thank the Lord that He created this wonderful chemical compound that is filled with energy and with the wonder-working power of the sun. No, not the Son of God, but the sun in the sky that God created. Carbon dioxide, which we breathe out, by the way, is held up high in the heavenly firmament, which you call the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide moves about and warms the planet. Otherwise, our earthly home would just be a dead, frozen rock, like the hearts of some people I've known. 150 years ago, our ancestors, bless their hearts, hoping to better themselves, began to burn coal in factories. Now, a 1 foot pile of coal condenses the energy of 10 feet of decomposed trees and plants. So there's a lot of bang for the buck. Our people burnt the coal and then the petroleum, which is even more energized. God created the perfect system that recycles. I know y'all like that word. A system that recycles carbon dioxide through trees and the oceans. This gives us clean air. But the system got overburdened and just couldn't keep up. Oh, and this is not God's fault. Ugh, I hate it when people ask, if God is so good, why is there still so much evil in the world? Well, it is because people are evil, selfish, wasteful, vengeful creatures. We've behaved like those awful tenants in the vineyards Jesus preached about. They were given land to care for, but did they? No. They squandered God's riches like a whore-hungry, drug-addled prodigal son or husband. Our ancestors did not know that a single molecule of carbon dioxide, which is smaller than an angel on a pinhead, remains in the heavenly firmament stockpiling one on top of each other for 100 years or more, ultimately disrupting the seasons and bringing disasters and woe on all our heads. But here is the good news. We have the power to break a generational curse and to turn it into a blessing. How? Repentance. Just repent of your evil, polluting ways. Oh, and I am not talking about sitting around self-indulgently calculating your personal carbon footprint and feeling all good about yourselves. No, we need national repentance. We need to turn from our sinful fossil fuel lifestyles and go in a whole new direction. Instead of a curse, we shall give unto our offspring a blessing of clean air and a stable planet. The Lord God Almighty Himself gives His firm promise to us in 2 Chronicles chapter 7. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Now that is God's good stuff. This is Elizabeth Jeremiah from the Elizabeth Jeremiah Global Worldwide Ministries in Jesus. May God richly bless you and keep you and your whole household too.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth Jeremiah, for joining us here in the Art House. If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it is time for our monthly puzzler answer and a new question. Last month, we had a question that climate advocates get a lot. Here it goes. You were at a party and you mentioned to a neighbor your renewed commitment to address climate change. Your neighbor, let's call him Samuel, said, "Wait a minute, I kind of like the idea of a little warming. We could sure use more heat up north. Think of the opportunities for agriculture. I don't know. Seems like global warming has some real upsides to it." Now, Samuel is not alone in thinking this. So what would you say to Samuel? I received many responses. Thank you for all of them. I wish I could share them all. But I do have two I want to share. One is from Donald Cepeda.
"Hey, Samuel. These are great points. However, this increased warming will come at the expense of other people in already warm climates. On a global level, costs will far outweigh the benefits. However, if you are only concerned with the well-being of your area, everybody else be darned, there is still reason to be concerned. Given how long we've let the current pace of climate change go already, why should we believe that we'll stop it later if we're not willing to stop it now? This has been an effort which has taken decades just to get to where we are today, which still isn't going to be enough to offset all of climate change's negative effects. There are real concerns that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's projections are too low, and we could blow past the livable climate for you from the north as well. Civilization has flourished in regions that had more temperate climates. Predators died off in the winter. If we take away that safety net of colder seasons for us, we are putting ourselves at risk to the kinds of diseases that plague and hinder development in the currently hotter parts of the world. We risk our food supply with the excess heat and precipitation which will come, which will dehydrate our crops on many days and flood them on others."
Thank you, Donald. I also heard from a climate communication expert, Melissa Teer. Melissa is the sustainability program manager at Swarthmore College. She also worked as a research assistant at Columbia University's Center for Research on Environmental Decisions. And here's what she had to say.
So there's been a lot of social science research on some of the best ways to communicate about climate change. A lot of this has focused on policymakers and scientists, but it can very much be used on the individual level in conversation. I think there are better and worse skills for when you're talking about topics like this. And we know that there are a lot of psychological biases that limit folks' abilities to think about climate change. It's a tough topic. It's depressing. The effects are in the future. And we're not good at talking or thinking about any of those things. In a conversation like this, I would focus on bringing the issue back home. The personal effects of climate change are, it's a little bit warmer, that can be kind of nice. Less snow might be nice. But perhaps he's a gardener, and that would affect his crops. Or perhaps he grew up on a farm, and we can tie the effects of climate change to agriculture and make that danger a little bit more present to him. But I think the point is that you need to have a conversation with that person and get to know him. In my opinion, bet you're better off not addressing it head on, and not saying, "Well, let's sit down and list all the ways that climate change are really negative." It's probably not your best approach. The better way to go about this is to have a personal conversation, draw out what is meaningful to that person, and then connect climate change to it, because, as you know well, Peterson, climate change connects to everything.
And now for our new puzzler question. This one was inspired by Charles Ashurst, a design engineer at Campbell Scientific. He's also a self-described crusty old curmudgeon. I've altered his question to fit in with the show and the length, but you'll get the main idea from it. And here is our new puzzler question. You are at a meeting with other climate advocates. There are some fresh young faces and also the seasoned older faces. And there's Charlie, a crusty old curmudgeon who's been on the climate change bandwagon since the 1970s. You all just heard a presentation about the need to build on shared values with lawmakers and leaders in the fossil fuel industry. Charlie blurts out, "Shared values? Really? These are determined folks we're up against. They don't play nice. We're not going to win by playing nice with them." So, what do you have to say to crusty old Charlie? Send me your answers, leave your name, contact info, and where you're from. Get back to me by March 15th, 2017. You can email your answers to radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. You can also text me or leave a voicemail of 3 minutes or less at the following number, 570-483-8194, plus one if calling from outside the USA. That number again is 570-483-8194. We're wrapping up this episode, but before we do, I want to tell you about next month's show. My guest will be Aaron Thier. Aaron is the author of Mr. Eternity, a novel that is very much about climate change. It is weird, funny, moving, insightful, and incredibly original. I literally have read it 3 times in a row now. It's an amazing book. Now, you may want to read it before next month's show so that it makes even more sense to you. Either way, you'll enjoy the show and you'll definitely enjoy Aaron. If you like audiobooks, there is an excellent audio version that works like an audio play. So check out Mystery Eternity by Aaron Thier and hear from the author himself in next month's show. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Technical support from Ricky Bradley. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Flannery Keck, and Steve Vol. Moral support from Madeline Pera. Very special thanks to our guests and contributors on this episode, Eileen Flanagan, Amani Thurman, Donald Cepeda, and Melissa Teer. All the music we use on the show is licensed unless otherwise specified. Special music for the Art House segment includes One Suite from the free 1920s collection on archive.org. Thank you for listening to today's show. Be sure to share Citizens Climate Radio. Please do it with your friends. Just look for Citizens Climate Lobby on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher Radio. You can also find us at northernspiritradio.org. We have a Facebook group as well. facebook.com/groups/citizensclimateradio. If you are on the Twitter, follow us at @CitizensCRadio. That's Citizen C Radio. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see info about our puzzler and find links to our guests. An easy way to share the show is to get a link to it over at ccl.podbean.com. On the right, you will see Citizens Climate Radio listed under categories. That's ccl.podbean.com. Bean, like hot chili bean. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.